The reading this morning is Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 6. Judge not that ye be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with the measure you use it will be measured back to you. Why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite. For first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you into pieces.
Good morning, Jimmy. Thank you, Jimmy, and good morning to everyone else. Excuse me while I get back on track here. I failed earlier to get the overhead off blank. Makes a difference, doesn't it? Appreciate everyone being here this morning. We have a good crowd. It's really great to see Alicia back with us today, and she informed me before services that after church this morning, she's going to challenge all the young boys to a soccer match out here on the side property. It is great to see you up and about, and it's good to have visitors with us this morning. We're always delighted to have folks drop in on us and worship with us, God, as we're doing this morning. We're not here to impress anybody or to put on a big display or anything. We're just servants of the Lord trying to serve Him and encourage each other in the difficult task of living the life of the Christian in a society, a culture, that has largely abandoned that endeavor. And we encourage you to be back with us at any time in the future you might have an opportunity to do so. We have throughout the year, of course, been engaged in a detailed study of the book of Genesis. Last week, we were looking at the story of Noah's flood. And the main source of emphasis in that lesson was on the subject of the flood as being a judgment of God. Mankind had become so corrupt, so wicked, so evil, that he really had no recourse but to bring this act of judgment upon humanity and destroy everything, everybody, except for Noah and his family, with which he recreated the human race. Today we're going to take a departure from our study of the book of Genesis, but it sort of plays off of what we were looking at last week, the concept of judgment. Except this time we're turning the mirror around and looking at ourselves and the way that we judge other people. Judgment is just a big part of life. The problem is we have a difficult time knowing how to do it and how to do it correctly. And that, I think, is what Jesus is addressing here in the Sermon on the Mount. That first verse, judge not that you be not judged, is the second most popular verse in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. We'll talk about the first one later in our lesson this morning. Judge not that you be not judged. That word judge there, the Greek word, is a word from which we get our English word critic or criticize. So the idea of judging others is to bring forth some kind of a criticism of other people and what they are doing, what they're saying, who they are. And Jesus is saying in simple language, don't do that. Now, of course, the typical use of this injunction from Jesus is to, on the part of many people today, is to fling this in the face, back in the face of those who would bring any criticism against us. Jesus said, do not judge. You don't have the right to criticize me. In other words, the idea that many people take away from this verse is it just shuts down any and all criticism. Nobody has the right to call into question anything that I do or that I say. Everybody just needs to shut up and let me live my life the way I want to live. Now, most of us from our backgrounds, when we hear that kind of use made of what Jesus said here, we tend to have a knee-jerk reaction to that, and we instantly say, that's not what Jesus meant here. And we're very eager to point out to other people that this is not what Jesus intended. And yet, Jesus is prohibiting something. Anytime the Lord tells us, don't do this, we need to pay attention to that. There's something there that if we're not careful, we're going to fall into a trap that's going to harm us or harm other people around us or both. And so Jesus is prohibiting something here when he says, don't do this. And so instead of challenging people who misuse this verse, which we're going to spend a few minutes at the outset doing, we need to really understand more deeply, what is it that Jesus is prohibiting here? What is it that he is warning us not to do? So that's what we're going to examine this morning. When Jesus said, don't judge other people, what is he talking about? Well, there is, first of all, what we need to consider that Jesus is not saying. He's not saying that we should never criticize or rebuke other people for any reason whatsoever. And there are several clues in the context that should make this amply clear. Notice, for example, in verse 6, after giving this instruction about not judging, he turns right around and says, do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before the swine, lest they trample them under their feet, and turn and tear you into pieces. It's interesting that what Jesus is saying in verse 6 is almost the flip side of what he said in verse 1. In verse 1, he said, don't judge, don't criticize. But in verse 6, he said, don't give what is holy to the dogs. In other words, he warns us against not being critical enough. Who are the dogs? Who are the swine? We're not going to pursue that question right here, but doesn't that require a judgment? Doesn't that require some kind of discrimination? If there are some people, under some circumstances, that can be defined as dogs or swine in the sense of, don't waste your time with them. And just stay away from those kinds of people because you're really wasting your time. There's not much good that you're going to be able to accomplish with those folks. But we have to be able to form some kind of judgment as to what people fit in that category. Look also later on in this same chapter, verses 15 through 20. He tells us, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. And then in verse 16, you will know them by their fruits. And then he repeats that thought in verse 20, therefore by their fruits you will know them. Beware of false prophets, and you'll know them by their fruits. Well, now how can I possibly obey that command unless I become a fruit inspector? I have to be able to look at the fruit of people's lives and make some kind of judgment as to whether or not who they are and what they are teaching conforms to God's word or not. Whether or not they are teaching that which is true or teaching that which is false. And Jesus says, you can know by looking at their lives. He expects us to make some kind of critical assessment of who they are. And we could go on through the rest of the New Testament and see many other examples of this in 1 John 4 and verse 1. The Apostle John says, test the spirits to see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 12 and 13, Paul, in dealing with this Corinthian fornicator, the man who was committing fornication with his father's wife, and at the end of that chapter, he actually criticized the Corinthians for not doing something about the situation. And he told them, do you not judge those who are inside? Put away the wicked man from among yourself. God expected those people to exercise judgment. So all I'm trying to establish right here is that whatever Jesus meant when he said, do not judge, we cannot take that to mean just a blanket refusal to pass any kind of judgment or criticism of any others. In fact, isn't it rather ironic? Have you ever noticed this? That those people who use this verse to silence their critics are doing the very thing they condemn in others? They're judging other people as being wrong and unacceptable in their behavior and what they're doing. I judge you as guilty of judging others. Now, just unpack that for a while and see if that isn't just a little bit silly. Very clearly, Jesus is using language here that is accommodative. It is simply impossible for us to go through our lives without making at least some judgments about other people on some occasions. For example, do we not choose some people to be friends with and avoid friendship with other people? We have our reasons, but are we not making a judgment? We're making a decision, a discernment about this person will be appropriate for me as a friend or this person will not. We choose to do business with some people and not with others. Again, we have our reasons, various considerations come into play, but we make a judgment as to which people we will do business with and which we will not. When somebody wrongs us, when somebody does something that really hurts us in some way, do we not demand justice? This isn't right. This isn't good. This isn't fair. And we expect some redress of grievances against the one who has perpetrated this crime against us. We expect a judgment. People who use this verse to promote a world in which no one ever judges anybody else for any reason are advocating a world where everybody is free to behave however they wish without any social repercussions whatsoever. And we have a word for a world like that. It's called anarchy. Anarchy, where everybody does whatever they want and nobody else can say or do anything about it. That's anarchy. I don't know about you, but I don't want to live in a world like that. Few of us do. Because it would just simply be unlivable. It would be a horrible way to live our lives. We all need some criticism in our lives. Now, hopefully, it's constructive criticism. It's the kind of criticism that helps us to grow and improve and develop our lives into maturity rather than tear us down. But we still need that kind of criticism in our lives. So, clearly, Jesus is not condemning all judgments here. Instead, he is regulating how we judge other people. We should do so when we decide that we need to pass some judgment on other people. We should do so with an abundance of caution and care. Now then, having said all of that then, we come back to the question then, well then what is Jesus prohibiting? There's something about judging others that we need to be very careful about. And I would suggest for our consideration that there are two hints that Jesus gives right here in the context that helps us identify the kind of judging that we need to be careful to avoid. The first hint that we want to see is in verse 2. He says, "With what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and by what measure you measure to others, it will be measured back to you." In other words, this impression he's making here to us is that how we treat other people is how they will treat us. Now, I said a moment ago that this is the second most popular passage in the Sermon on the Mount. Do you know what the first one is? In the same chapter, look at verse 12. Whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. And we have a label for that, don't we? We call it the golden rule. However you want other people to treat you, that's the way you should treat other people. Have you ever noticed that verse 1 is just, in verse 2, is simply the flip side of verse 12? In verse 12, however you want other people to treat you, that's the way you should treat them. In verse 2, what Jesus is saying is, however you treat other people is how they're going to treat you. And particularly when it comes to that matter of criticizing other people. However you choose to criticize or critique or pass a judgment on other people and what they are saying or doing, that's the same medicine they're going to dish out to you. Now, I know some people read verse 2, talks about judgment, with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and apply that to God's judgment of us. We don't deny that. But I don't think in the context that's really what Jesus is pointing to. He's just giving a simple rule of human relationships, that how we treat other people is generally how we're going to be treated by them. But the second hint that we see is found in verses 3 through 5. Let's look at that again. Why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. I can't help but think that when Jesus spoke these words, a chuckle spread through the crowd that was listening. Because try to visualize what's going on here. Here's a guy who has a 2x4 dangling out of his eye. And he comes up to his friend and says, I see you have a little speck in your eye. Let me help you get that little speck out of your eye, the 2x4 dangling out of his own. I mean, it's preposterous, but it makes a point. And I think the point that Jesus was making here in this illustration is that oftentimes when it comes to the matter of trying to improve other people's lives by our criticism of what they're doing, we're not really qualified to make those judgments. Now, sometimes we may be, but oftentimes we are not. And that's why I think the key word here in these verses is that first word in verse 5, hypocrite. Hypocrite. A hypocrite is somebody who claims to be something they really aren't. They are pretenders. They claim to be qualified to help somebody else fix the problems in their lives, and their own lives are a mess. They're not qualified to go around trying to fix everybody else. And so I think the prohibition that Jesus is laying out here is, he's prohibiting that kind of judging that is reckless and harsh and vindictive. It is judging that destroys rather than builds up. It makes us look foolish rather than wise. And that's the kind of judging that we need to avoid. Okay. Now, we've tried to unpack here what Jesus is saying in these 5 or 6 verses. And it's really easy. It would be easy just to shut things down right here. Now we have a clear understanding of what Jesus is saying. I don't feel like this is enough. Because I know the question that I know I've often struggled with, and probably you are too right now, having gone through all of this, we've kind of sorted out what Jesus is talking about, the question that looms in everybody's mind is, how can I avoid this kind of judging? How can I check myself when I see somebody else saying or doing something wrong and I feel an urge to move in and try to correct them? How can I prevent myself from making the kind of mistake that Jesus is talking about here in the judgment that I render, in the criticism that I offer my friend? I want to suggest for the rest of our time this morning that we look at 3 filters that would be very helpful to apply before we speak up and offer a criticism to other people. The first thing that we need to look at is our own heart. We need to evaluate our own heart, our own life first. Remember the story in Luke chapter 9, where Jesus and his apostles are going through the land of Samaria on their way to Jerusalem. They approach a village of the Samaritans and they send ahead to prepare a place for them to spend the night. Samaritans send back, say, no, stay away from here. We're not interested in you guys. And James and John were just offended by that. And they come to Jesus and say, Lord, shall we call down fire from heaven on these people? We need to teach them a lesson. They're not going to treat you that way. And do you remember what Jesus said? He turned and rebuked them and said, you do not know what manner of spirit you are of, for the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. You know what haunts me about this statement is Jesus is telling two of his strongest disciples, you do not know what manner of spirit you are of. Look at your own heart. How many times have you said or done something and only later do you look back on that and you think, what was I thinking? I just didn't think through the implications of what I said or did at the time I was doing it. And this is what I think Jesus was trying to get James and John and the other apostles and us today to understand. We don't always know or pay attention to the motivations behind some of the things that we do. And we need to stop and think before we jump in, as James and John failed to do on this occasion. So the question we need to ask ourselves is, do we really have the best interest of these people at heart? Or are we just trying to act tough? Are we just trying to display our superiority of the people that we are criticizing? Psychologists have for many years talked about the concept of projection, psychological projection, where we tend to project onto other people some of the many faults that we struggle with in our own lives. And it's very easy to see those faults in other people around us precisely because we're not doing a very good job of dealing with them in ourselves. They bother us, they plague us, they drag us down, we see it bothers us, and when we see it in other people, we spot it. And we want to correct them. That's what Jesus, I think, is prohibiting here. Don't do that. First, before you criticize somebody else, stop and evaluate your own heart first. Take a good, hard look at yourself. Am I qualified to be the one criticizing this person for what they are doing? If I'm not, shouldn't I work on myself first? There's a second filter that we should apply, and that is learn the facts before we open our mouths. Before we decide to jump on somebody for what they have done, we need to take care that we understand exactly what the situation is. Jesus said in John 7:24, do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. Do not judge according to appearance. When we judge other people according to appearance, it means we judge them according to how things look from the superficial perspective that we occupy. As we look upon what they have done, there is an appearance there that strikes us as wrong in some way. But do we know all the facts behind that appearance? Am I fully aware of everything that led to the situation that I'm trying to critique? You know, we have a very bad tendency as human beings to seek to amplify other people's faults and ignore their virtues. The things that they're good at, the things that they do right, that they do well, we just sort of let that pass by, but when they make a mistake, when they're off track just a little bit, boy, we just zero in on that and we want to jump on that and fix that. And not give them any credit for the virtues that they've displayed, for the good things that they have done. We need to be careful that we balance our criticism of their faults with praise for the good things they have done. I have found, usually the hard way, that if I'm trying to help somebody else deal with the problems in their lives, it's very helpful if I can first of all acknowledge the good that they are doing, the good things that I see in their lives. Help them to recognize up front they have a lot of potential, a lot of good, a lot of contributions that they're making in the lives of other people around them. They need to hear that before they hear any criticism about the areas that they need to work on. Are there extenuating circumstances behind what I am about to criticize? Are there some things that have happened that I'm not aware of? Are there perhaps some appropriate questions that I need to ask first before I just pounce on whatever this perceived mistake is? Sometimes, if I knew all the circumstances behind a person's word or deed, it might radically change my perception of the legitimacy of what they did. But I'll never know if I don't ask questions first. So find out what the facts are before we decide to pass judgment on somebody. And then a third and final filter that we should pass our criticism through is it needs to be administered in love. You can't talk about love without, of course, bringing up Paul's famous passage in 1 Corinthians 13. And I want us to read this with the view in mind of I'm about to approach somebody with a pretty serious criticism of something that they have done. Before I do that, I need to read this and think about applying these principles in my upcoming interaction with this person. Paul writes, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Or we could look at some other passages, like Galatians 6 and verse 1, that specifically deals with the question of how do you treat somebody who has fallen into sin? Paul gives a very concise but potent description of how we are to approach that person. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. 2 Timothy 2, verses 24 and 25, the servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach, patient in humility, correcting those who are in opposition. James chapter 2, verse 13, judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Do you notice some of the words that are used in these passages that we've looked at? Gentleness, kindness, patience, mercy, forgiveness. Before I approach somebody with a criticism, I need to ask myself, do I have the right attitude in approaching this person? Am I doing this out of love? Or is there some other hidden motive that I may not fully understand myself? We need to over and over and over and over again review these instructions from the apostles, all within the context of how we approach other people with their problems and how we try to help them deal with their problems. You see, these passages are not preventing judgment that we might render for others. They are tempering that judgment. They're telling us how to do it in an effective and positive fashion. How we can do it in such a way that people, when the whole episode is over, they can look back on their interaction with us and say, you know, that was hard, but I appreciate that person for coming to me and talking to me about that. I needed that. And that's our objective. That's what we're trying to achieve when we come to others in trying to correct something that is wrong in their lives. You know, if we all passed our criticisms of others through these three filters. First, it would transform our relationships. It would transform our marriages. Husbands and wives would be spared much of the conflict and bitterness that poisons so many marriages today. Husbands and wives are quick to criticize each other, are they not? Precisely because we know each other so well. Husbands and wives need to be criticized. But there's a right and wrong way to do it. Spouses, if there's something in your partner that you don't like, that you don't appreciate, you think needs to be addressed, you have every right to do so. But remember the words of the Lord, don't judge, for in the way that you measure it out, it's going to be measured back to you. If you want poison to be injected into your marriage, then by all means, go at them with all fours. Hold nothing back. But if you want your criticism of your spouse to be a positive, uplifting thing to your marriage, to your relationship with that person, you better stop and apply these filters. Stop and give hard thought as to how you're going to approach this. Because the words that you say are going to have an enormous impact on the future of your relationship with your spouse. If we applied these filters, it would transform how parents would see their kids. They would no longer see their kids as being crushed under a cascade of negativity, but they would see them blossom into confident young adults. Once again, we know our children better than anybody else, and it is so easy to see the mistakes and the flaws and the missteps that they make along the way, and to jump on those things with the purpose of fixing them. Our kid is not going to be like that. But you know, they're little humans too. And there's a right and wrong way to approach those children and to fix what is wrong in their lives. Apply these filters and see if it doesn't change how you approach your children in trying to help them navigate the learning process in their own young lives. If we could apply these filters appropriately, brethren would build bridges with each other instead of building the walls that so often divide us and tear congregations apart. We could finally learn how to work in unity with each other. If we'd simply learn how to critique each other appropriately. You can apply the same principle to our relationship with coworkers and customers and vendors and neighbors. Everybody would just get along together so much better in a climate of trust and mutual respect if we could just learn how to judge, as Jesus said, with righteous judgment and not according to appearance. In John chapter 12, Jesus said, I did not come to judge the world, but to save the world. Look at your own life. Judd made reference to this in his eloquent remarks before the Lord's Supper. Doesn't God have so much that he could hold against us? Aren't there so many mistakes and imperfections in our own lives that God could condemn us for? And yet Jesus said, I did not come to condemn. I did not come to judge, but to save. Why did Jesus die on the cross? Because of the mistakes in our lives, because of the sins that we allow to enter our hearts, our minds, our behaviors. But instead of condemning us, Jesus came to bear our judgment in his own body on the cross. Should that not be our objective as we look about us at the mistakes and the sins and the imperfections in the lives of other people? Judgment is without mercy to the one who shows no mercy, James said. Let's show mercy to one another in our relationships. If you're here this morning, you recognize in this and so many other areas of your life, you need the Lord and his guidance and his forgiveness in your life. We're here to help you in any way that we can. We encourage you to come forward as we stand and sing the invitation song.